the Mix Zone podcast by Infront Lab. On this podcast, we speak with sports and innovation leaders from around the world about creating sport experiences fans truly deserve. For those who are joining us for the first time, we're the digital and tech branch of Infront Sports. At the lab, we put the fans first and use technology to improve their experiences by helping rights owners meet their fans at every touch point along their journeys. We work with all sports-related industries, from data to content, and everything in between. For episode of The Mix Zone, I'm Marav Sevier, your host for the podcast today, and we're going to be talking about fan data from all different perspectives of how to collect it, why it's still a struggle to collect it, and what do you do with the data once it's already been collected. So joining us for this episode are Pasi Lankinen, sports business consultant who has worked for FC Barcelona and City Football Group, Menino Pereira, co-founder of Pindrop, and from right here at Infront Lab, Alon Khemsani. He's a growth and success expert specializing in our fan engagement and data collection platform. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for having us on, Marav.
Thank you.
Before we dive into this deep, deep world of fan data that I assume we won't even be able to scratch the surface of it, I'd love it if you guys can introduce yourselves, tell our listeners a little bit about who you are, what you've done. Pasi, we'll start with you.
Yep, great, thanks. I've been in the sports industry since 2003. Was lucky to join FC Barcelona at the time, it was great. I had the chance to grow with the Barca brand through its most successful years until 2015. At Barca, I worked through most of the business areas in the business and ended up being head of business intelligence strategy at the time. Then joined City Football Group 2015 as VP Director of Partnership Strategy and Operations, and worked there until 2021. Since then, I've been an independent sports business consultant, still consulting to City Football Group among other clients.
Sure. Hi, quite a long history there in European football, and Menino, you can relate to that.
Absolutely. So I'm Menino Pereira. I've spent about 15 years in the industry working in a blend of roles. So on the rights holder side, was most recently with Arsenal Football Club, where I was heading the partnership research and insights. And in a past sort of like role was with the London 2012 Olympics. On the brand side, I spent a good sort of 3 years of my life with Capgemini Consulting, worked the agency side with Sport5 for a good few years. And also worked in a media publishing capacity with Sportskeeda. We're one of the biggest publishers out there. I currently run a sports marketing agency called Pindrop, as you alluded to earlier, Marav. And this is together with my ex-colleague, Sean Thornley. And we sit at that sort of like unique intersection of data, digital, and emerging technology, working with some premium rights holders and brands. Delighted to be on this panel and discussing my favorite subject, which is all things data, digital, emerging technology.
Yeah, I already see the smile on everyone's faces, especially Alon. Alon has also been working in terms from the perspective of technology and data for a couple of years now. So Alon, I'll let you also introduce yourself.
Sure. Thank you, Marav, and thank you, Menini and Pasi, for the really interesting introduction. I'm Alon. I'm actually in the sports side since I remember myself, but more on the court. So I'm a professional basketball player for a lot of years in my life. In the last couple of years, I was doing the transition to the behind the scenes in terms of the whole sports area. So yeah, dealing with sport tech in the last couple of years, especially in the worlds of data and fan engagement in the last couple of years here in Infront Lab, basically managing the entire cycles from getting in touch with new prospects and new clients from all over the world, basically. So federations, leagues, clubs, any kind of brands and sports entities, and trying to tailor any kind of digital solutions to make sure their data and fan engagement efforts are reaching their fullest potential and such. So that's in a few words.
Well, I'm going to dive right into our topic, obviously, fan data. We've all, over the past couple of years, have heard more and more often how important data is to collect it, to use it. And yet a lot of sports organizations are still struggling to collect data and understand really how to make the best use out of it. So before we, you know, go into how to use the data, let's talk more about why it's so important, because we all know it's important, but a lot of people, if you actually sit down and you ask them, so why is data so important for you? My guess is that a lot of people can't actually answer that question. You can correct me, Pasi Menino, if I'm wrong.
You want to go, Menino?
You're right. I can go first. And I think it's super important to your point, Mirav, on understanding the data and then being able to sort of like quantify its sort of like true importance. And for that, it's almost sort of like important to take a very like structured and segmented view to it. And I mean, some examples in which we'd sort of like try and categorize the data to even sort of like begin with, right, is more sort of like, okay, preference-led, your levels of sort of like opt-ins, profile-related. So, you know, understanding sort of names, locations, the transactional data, which is your sort of like ticket purchases, engagement-led, email opens, sentiment-led, which is, okay, like comments, what are people sort of like talking about, et cetera, behavioral, consumption-led, sort of attitudinal-led through surveys, et cetera. And from there, sort of developing a really sort of deep understanding of the fan base, because once you do that, there is huge commercial upside to it, right? Because you can then sort of take this rarefied, distilled, consensual data to a partner, to a sponsor, and that then becomes something that's like really, really powerful. So just sort of, yeah, having a deep dive understanding of what your data structure looks like, adding both from a depth and breadth perspective, and then sort of like utilizing that to help strategize on your decision-making goes in a long, long way. And, you know, like it's important because yes, there is a commercialization, but we can't sort of like overlook advocacy as a metric. It is a huge sort of like currency. Fans should feel like, okay, a club needs to know who I am. And then sort of blending in a very sort of native and authentic way some really cool cool content and like partners within it that doesn't sort of jar the experience, provides that level of like engagement and experience, just makes it in a sense the perfect marriage. And that is what sports rights holders should sort of aspire for, and that gives then brand partners a genuine sort of like weed into the ecosystem.
And you know, that all sounds nice and well, but Pasi, often harder to actually get that done, to dive into that deeply into data. And a lot of the organizations struggle with it. Why do you think they struggle with it so much?
Well, sorry, I'll answer first my answer to the first question. Why is it important? I think it's like any brand needs to know that its customers and the sports organizations are no different. So fans are in a way also customers, for they have different types of engagement, very emotional, but also transactional. And I'd say broadly, there's from a business perspective, there's like four objectives to that understanding. I would categorize that. One is engagement in terms of content and experiences. So why is it important to know the fan in order to get to provide them with the kind of content and engagement experiences that they want to have? And then obviously selling products and services of the sports organization, club, entity, property, and then commercial efforts. So understanding the fan in order to be able to sell effectively to sponsors, to show what kind of impact they could generate by partnering with a sports organization, and then ultimately obviously helping them activate and communicate to those fans in the most effective way and in a targeted way. So I'd say those four are broadly the objectives to with everything that Menino was saying. the thing is that with some of these, there's an overlap in terms of the objectives or the kind of data you want to have and the challenges. And in some cases, they are different. And being able to understand the use, what you want to have the data for, I think is one of the important things. So that's sort of broadly a headlines on the challenge.
What are some of these overlaps that you've noticed?
Overlaps. Well, obviously there's the kind of data which are references of fan, also just purely transactional. Obviously, location, the socioeconomic, the demographics. Those are useful for any of these objectives. But then, for example, once we start thinking about, you know, the difference between selling products and services, well, one of the challenges is that the sports organizations struggle with is that we end up not having so many contact points and so many transactions directly with the fans. So when you're thinking about selling tickets and how to sell most effectively tickets or season tickets compared to the objectives of a brand towards the fans, then we're getting into different types of information we want to have.
And in terms of getting this type of different information, you mentioned these touch points that we have with our fans. What are some of these touch points that sports organizations can use to gather information from their fans? I mean, especially now when we're in this era that everyone's talking more about online security and cookies and GDPR and lowering and changing how it is that we share our data online, is this adding to the struggle? And how is it that sports organizations can now actually collect this data? And I want to open it up to all three of you.
Well, I think I'm going to go ahead. And first, I want to, you know, address what Merino and Passy said here. And of course, that I'm totally agreeing. I mean, of course, that by leveraging all the, you know, the different types of data, sports organizations can drive really continuous improvement across all the aspects of their operations and workflows and make the relevant adjustments. And this data-driven approach enables them to basically boost and increase operational efficiency and any kind of, you know, deepen the fan engagement and optimize any financial and monetization opportunities. And I want to add to that, you know, you mentioned the struggle about, you know, collecting data and how to approach it. So, of course, I think the struggle starts from the fact that we are still on a phase of learning the data importance and how it can affect our organization and how we can, you know, expand the entire cycle of it. But I think one of the struggles is that it's a very delicate ecosystem between a team and their fans. And you just mentioned the channels and touch points with these fans. And I think it's just showing how delicate the ecosystem is when, you know, you have a fan which is super passionate about a club and such. And I think the struggle here, and I wouldn't call it a struggle, but the challenge here is to find the right language, find the right approach to basically approach these fans to make sure they're part of the game, because we want to make them part of the game, and we need to make sure how to do so and not harming in the same way in the same time to this really delicate ecosystem. So it's a very interesting, and I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to have much more sophisticated and really interesting ways from both ways, fans and clubs, in the next years to come.
And just building on what Alan said as well, I think there's sort of new technologies as well that can potentially be embraced, and how you sort of like apply this in a meaningful way with sports rights holders. So as an example, a Web3 program that we were sort of like building at a previous rights holder, where we sort of like got to was providing some sort of like value exchange for the fan for their sort of like data, because fans need to feel that for the time and for the effort that they're actually spending, there is some sort of an incentive that is to be gained. And the way we were thinking about it is, you sort of bring people into the ecosystem for sharing something, you give them, let's say, a digital collectible, and you know, it's then sort of like much more personalized to them, something that they can actively sort of like engage with, like take to the metaverse, wherever it is that they essentially go. And that drives essentially a new level of fandom. And through that, you sort of like, you know, get a deeper understanding of your fan base. It harbors that sort of loyalty elements, etc. And you're then sort of like attracting new fans into the ecosystem who then sort of over-index as, you know, young, tech-savvy, more sort of like transactional, etc. So there is that blend where, you know, you're providing a deeper level of engagement to your current fan base, as well as like bringing new fans into the ecosystem and sort of like driving a lot of that reward, loyalty, incentive behavior to continuously sort of like grow the ecosystem using technology as a product.
I think if the content is engaging and or there's an experience, there's a competition, there's a promotion that interests the fans, they are quite willing or at least not disincentivized to answer questions or provide some information in exchange. I think the challenge, not calling it a struggle, but let's call it always a challenge. The challenge is that when you have millions of fans, in many cases, you know, big fan base, and you gather at best, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even in the best case of these kind of data points, it still is just a representation of what the fans, what the fan base is. And I think that's where maybe one of the differences between when you use that data in terms of for example selling club products and services, you want to be more accurate about the information you have, whereas you know, in an approach to when you're doing collaborations with partners, would you could use that data as a proxy to segment your fan base and target based on that. I think that sometimes it can go very wrong if you try and customize very much something, content or something based on data that you don't have directly from a fan, and it's more a proxy. That's the only thing you have to ensure, because that's the one thing you have to be cautious is if when a brand, I would obviously many brands will say different, but when a brand makes a mistake with this kind of activation, it's a different thing than when a sports property, which a fan, you know, is very emotionally linked, loves when that kind of mistake happens. That you sort of you end up providing or assuming a certain type of fan profile and customize something, and then you get it wrong. You should always avoid that.
Cassie, you mentioned bringing in, obviously, if we have millions of fans, even if you reach a fraction of them and the fraction of them answer a couple questions, it's, you know, tens, hundreds of thousands of these data points. So if we're going to look at it as a timeline, we talked about why it's important to collect, different ways of collecting. So now that you've collected this data, what's the best way about going about characterizing it? Like you mentioned, categorizing it in the best possible way, so that you can approach your fans, like you mentioned, without making these kinds of mistakes that with emotional sports fans can be devastating. And of course, people remember more the mistakes than they do the celebrations, unfortunately, when it comes to things like that. So like you said, it's definitely something that we want to avoid.
Yeah, one thing I'd say is my experience, at least. I'd love to hear if Menino has some other experience, but my experience is that when partners and the properties are collaborating in doing activations, doing a promotion and thinking about what could be, you know, sometimes it's just more about generating the impact rather than thinking maybe long term about what could be used, how that contact point could be used for for building something further. So I have to say, I haven't seen many situations where there's a long-term plan, you know, partnerships go for years, you know, average 3 years, 3, 4, mm-hmm. 5 years. Thinking of, let's generate a set of contact points, activations where we can gather data that we can then use afterwards during that partnership. And that's something I think that should be done much more, definitely. I think the way partnerships are evolving nowadays is more to a collaboration between the brand and the sports organization. I think these kind of activations will be coming more and more. I think if you think, well, you know, go back a few years and it was more, you know, sponsorship, we called it sponsorship, not a partnership, and it was more about brand awareness and just putting a logo on visible on TV or whatever. There's clearly been a development into actually collaborating and even having common objectives in terms of building fan base yeah. together with a partner. So I think there will be more about of these kind of activations, but it's definitely something that is not happening enough still.
Yeah, and I can elaborate before Menino here. I'm sure you have a lot of things to say about that, which is going to be super interesting. But I can share from the Infront Lab perspective that a lot of our clients are integrating their partnerships and their partners' efforts into their business, into their strategy, into the different workflows that working with us. So they're making sure to involve the partners from the get-go because they know also the value of these partners and you know the new stuff that can be done with partners and provide them a lot of stuff for their collaboration that were never being able to be achieved before. So definitely I agree with that, that partners are super important. So yeah, Menino, I will give you the stage because I'm sure you have a lot to elaborate.
Thanks, Alon. And you're absolutely right. And Pasi as well, you hit the nail on the head. It's that sort of like keyword of collaboration, right? Which is absolutely like key, and partners are becoming rightly so much more demanding in trying to maximize the rights, the assets that they have with sports rights holders. And
maximizing.
Absolutely. Maximizing, optimizing, ensuring that, you know, every buck is essentially accounted for. And that is a strategy that we sort of like started to take during my last role with the rights holder. And it was moving away from that whole sort of like spray and pray approach, you know, like you stick a logo and, you know, you just like tick a box, towards delivering more of these omni-channel approaches. So what we started doing is across sort of like digital and physical, we ensured that, you know, every channel was working in cohesion with each other. And this was across sort of your app, your organic social, your paid social, your emails, push, SMS, and, you know, like making sure that they're like meaningfully working in cohesion. You're then sort of like able to collect the data. And this was always sort of like underpinned by a data capture form and back then by sort of your pixels, your tagging, etc. And with the reward mechanisms, so fans sort of like enter into these programs that we were creating with partners to then sort of like drive outcomes. And we'd have sort of, you know, like entry competitions where we'd have more users enter the club's database, more opt-ins for that sort of like depth of marketing, and run these programs on an annual basis. So as Pasi mentioned, the buck doesn't sort of like stop. It just, you know, there is that continual sort of like engagement. We learn more about the fans. We learn about what's sort of important to them. The partner can sort of get to them in a very short, sharp, focused, retargeted manner based on their preferences, habits, behaviors, to then drive the sort of bottom of funnel objectives that they're looking to achieve out of the partnership. So yeah, it just needs to be strategic. It needs to sort of like come through together. And that's where we experienced a bit of success. There's not enough of this sort of like going around, and that's something we are looking to push with our current clients as Pindrop. But that's where we sort of like see the future. Everything sort of like working in collaboration via this sort of like omnichannel approach to drive value for the fans and provide them something that's very targeted, personalized, and on the back of like experiences, rewards, incentives as well, right? Because again, if you're able to provide, you know, first access or, you know, something that's more personalized feeds, et cetera, that mm-hmm. just sort of like drives positive behavior. And the last thing I'd say is that from a collaboration standpoint as well, blending your sort of loyalty programs between what the brands have as well as, you know, what the rights holders are building can also drive a further level of engagement where you're integrated sort of like deeper and one can be used to sort of like redeem against the other. And there is that constant sort of like sharing and collaboration behavior that's being further driven.
One of the things
kind of touched upon it throughout the conversation, different ways that... Oh, sorry, Pasi, go ahead. I'll save my question for later.
Okay. Well, one of the things I was going to say is that we have to understand here, you know, Menino has been in the likes of Arsenal. I've seen the reality of FC Barcelona, City Football Group. These are sports properties which have resources which many other sports organizations don't have. We have to understand sports organizations in many cases, or most cases, as companies are not very big and have very limited resources. And I think it's not so much the fact that the people in these organizations don't understand the importance of having data gathering, structures, CRMs, and all that. It's just the struggle of not having the resources to develop everything that they would want to do, and the continuous sort of challenges to prioritize what is the most important data or the most important objective you want to achieve with this. And I think there has to be a bit of slack given many times the headline is, why don't sports organizations do more? This is, you know, why it's been years and all that. I think there's just a practical reason for it. And I'm sure, like, you know, suppliers and providers like Menino here, they can help them in this. And I always talk about the fact that you know, one of the key players in this kind of ecosystem is also the sports competitions, the leagues, that should help a lot, because finding economies of scale and synergies in these kind of projects is something that can enable that. Jumping up and moving a level up in all this challenge of data and use of data.
Pasi, you kind of beat me to my next question, which was about the smaller teams, about the smaller organizations that don't have the resources that FC Barcelona and the Arsenal have. And maybe, Menino, as Pasi said, you probably work with this, so maybe I'll move this question over to you. Is how would you suggest that teams of smaller size, without the resources, without the personnel, without perhaps even the know-how to do it, how would you suggest to them to strategize, you know, if they're at a starting point, or maybe they're a little bit past the starting point, but they're still a little bit lost?
Thanks, Mirav. And yeah, it's a great point raised by Pasi as well, that, you know, not everyone will have the muscle power of an Arsenal or a Barcelona or a Man City. And, you know, a lot of sports side holders are at the beginning of their journey. And it's that whole prioritization, right? Like, what is essentially like most important? Like, it's great to, you know, aspire for the skies, but I always sort of like advise that, you know, build a bit of a roadmap. Okay, like, okay, in 5 years, where do you want to be? In 10 years, where do we want to be? What can we sort of like immediately solve that's potentially sort of like low-hanging fruits? But keeping in mind, what are the sort of core guiding principles, right? I mean, you cannot afford to fall from sort of like engaging your fan base, getting to them in the right way, because fans will see sort of like right past that. So I'd say, like, you know, rather than, you know, suddenly bring on board 5 tools or 10 tools or whatever it is, and, you know, just get lost in a whole landmine of data, think about, okay, tactically, like, what can I sort of like do first? How can, like, I position myself in a way that's slightly more unique and, you know, a slightly more sort of differentiated proposition to what's like out in the market? And how can I sort of, you know, just put all my cards on the table and really look to sort of like deploy it using tech providers like yourselves, other players in the market, that, you know, they can embrace it and try and like deliver a solution that works both from a fan perspective as well as like providing value from a current partner as well as like prospect perspective to sort of like help them get there. But yeah, that's what I'd say. Like, take a very sort of stage-stepped approach to it, but try and create something that's a bit more sort of like unique and differentiated to what exists.
So, in full transparency, one of our products is an activation product to help sports organization gain that zero and first party data. And Alon, you've been working with a lot of these organizations, some of them bigger, some of them smaller, throughout the years. And without naming names, can you share a little bit about the different processes that you've gone through with them, with, you know, maybe organizations who don't have the resources versus those who do, and the different types of data that you've helped them collect over the years?
Yeah, of course. I totally agree with Menino here. I think the low-hanging fruits are the goal for the, you know, for the first months, especially. And, you know, let's face it, most of the clubs are medium, small size, and not, you know, huge. And that takes, you know, a matter of resources and such. So we're always trying to go step by step with such clubs and organizations, understand the value they're trying to get, understand the goals, understand which kind of data they're trying to capture. And the data they're trying to capture, of course, support a long-term goal, you know, in a year or a few years in terms of digital marketing or you know, monetization opportunities they're aiming to launch and open. So yeah, low-hanging fruits, I think, and strategize well, taking into account the different, you know, resources and limited resources they have. And you know, we're trying to tailor each club and each organization the right solutions for them in terms of content, in terms of their engagement, in terms of their fan base. It's also a matter of a bit of a process to learn their fan base and what are their, you know, behavior and what, how keen they are towards the club. So a lot of, you know, we have a lot of different examples, but the beauty of it is that every club and every fan base is different than the other in terms of the engagement and in terms of how they're doing stuff, of the intentions and the sentiment of the club with the fans and this delicate ecosystem that we discussed before. So I think we're taking all of these into account when approaching such a strategy looking forward with any kind of club.
We talked about, you know, why we need to collect data, a little bit about the collection and characterization of the data points that we're able to gain over the years. But Pasi, what are some of the creative ways that you yourself, in the different roles that you've taken part in or that you've seen others do in terms of how we use the data? Because at the end of the year, at the end of the day, we talk a lot about, you know, engaging fans, making personal experiences for them and wanting to improve those experiences. But from the sports organization perspective, there's also the side that we don't like talking about, which is the fact that we need to make money in order to support all the activities and campaigns that we do. So what are some of the creative ways that you yourself or you've seen others use data in order to kind of tip both sides of the scale?
Well, one good example, very practical one in terms of, you know, using it commercially is just doing sponsorship impact surveys among your fan base or even a broader football base, football fan base in case of football, but the sports fan base. And then you using that when you're doing that with a specific sponsor, about a specific sponsor, you can then use that as a proxy for supporting commercial processes, selling to new partners, categorizing if it's an FMCG brand, if it has been a high ticket purchase type brand, B2B brand. You can use this then as a way of showing what the kind of impact that a new partner could have, even if it is not in the exact same category as the brand that partner that already is partnering with the business or has been in the past. So I think that's one. And then I mean, there's multiple ways that when you are doing an activation with a partner, it's about thinking what kind of question would naturally fit into that activation that the fan can easily answer, and then you can use afterwards. So I remember one from a long time ago when we were doing an activation for an insurance, car insurance company, and they were asking about what kind of, as part of the activation, was there was a question about what kind of car they have, to the fans. And I was saying to them, the next time what you should ask is when is your insurance ending? Because that's the key data point you want to have in terms of doing an activation, because they renew only once a year, so you don't want to do every month an activation without knowing only 1/12 of the fan base will be even taking the decision. So thinking actually from a perspective of what is the objectives, again, seems very simple, but sometimes it's forgotten. It's what is the activation or the next action you want to do? Well, that's the data you want to gather.
Manino, how about you?
Again, like, fully agree with what Pasi said, and again, like, objective being the key word. What is it that you want to sort of truly look to achieve? And just being sort of like creative about it. So we've in the past sort of used zero party data platforms, and tried to ask some of these like simple questions. Let's say for our coffee partners, as an example, mm-hmm. understanding those sort of like responses from our fans, and then sort of like tailoring some sort of like experiences using that data to shape sort of future campaigns, activations, to then like optimally sort of like drive results was great, because again, it didn't seem sort of like jarring to the fans. It's something that they would natively sort of like respond to, but yet helped us sort of acquire that information, which would then help sort of shape what the outcome could potentially look like for the partner. So it's trying to like keep it as simple as you can, so that
fans respond as
natural as possible, and equally sort of like getting the information that you desire for that best helps respond to the end objective, which is absolutely key.
And then on what sort of activations have you done with partners over the years that have brought in some interesting data points that were able to help them?
Good question, because we had a few of them. I think one of the most interesting example is a client that understand the potential among their fans for drinking beer. So they kind of position themselves with a relevant data capture, a lot of about this area of questions and information and data, and eventually they were able to have a really great and long-term collaboration with one of the biggest beer providers out there. And I think this is really a great example of a collaboration that can be established by a really great work behind scenes of capturing data and understanding the nature of specific fan base and how potentially can bring to a partner, both to the partner and to the team as well, right? Because the fans also enjoyed a really great offers by the partners, and the entire ecosystem of this was expanded. And this is a really great example. We have a different examples, but I think this one showing really great how such data and how such behavior can be leveraged into real life and real monetization opportunities.
Well, I think we only just scratched the surface of what we can do with data and how we can collect it. But I think as an industry and as a whole, we've only really scratched the surface of data and what it can be done with. And not only on this episode, but we've already gone quite long. And even though we can continue going for hours, I think we may have to save this for either round two of this panel or further discussion. So if anybody wants to reach out to any of you individually. I'm assuming they can also find you on LinkedIn if they have any questions and so forth. But Pasi, Manino, Alon, thank you very much for joining us on this episode of the podcast. We really appreciate having you on the Mix Zone.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us and really enjoyed the discussion with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bharav.
That wraps up this episode of The Mix Zone by InfrontLab. I'm Marav Sevier. You can find me and InfrontLab on LinkedIn. Don't hesitate to reach out and chat with our team about sports tech solutions or just last night's game. Enjoyed the episode? Let us know your thoughts on the podcast, and don't forget to rate us. We'll see you next time.